Hi, everyone. It's Tanzina back with you on The Takeaway. Ever hear the stereotype that LGBT people are better off financially than their straight counterparts? Well, it's been around for a long time, and it probably comes from the fact that the most visible queer people in the media have historically been well-off white men without children. Except research shows that queer people face higher rates of poverty and unemployment, and in most cases, they make less money than straight folks. Busting this myth is the focus of a new series called Queer Money Matters by the podcast Nancy from WNYC Studios. Nancy co-hosts Tobin Lowe and Kathy Tu join me in the studio to talk about the project.
I'm a huge personal finance nerd. And so when we started talking about doing a series about money and the economy, I was like, yes, give it to me, all of it. And then I feel like other people's eyes glazed over, but then, you know, we broadened out and we're talking more generally about the economy and how it's sort of built for straight cisgendered folks and how us queer folks have to fit into it.
Tobin, when you started working on this, are you equally fascinated by personal finance like Kathy?
I would say I fall into the camp of cover my eyes and look through the cracks between my fingers at money.
Why is that?
I think like a lot of people, it feels scary to talk about, you know, like talking about money somehow, even though it's sort of like it's a hard number thing. It feels very personal and it feels like it's a reflection of how you live your life. And so I think that's partly why we wanted to do the series also is there's this intersection of numbers telling you a story about how people live their lives and how the world influences them.
And it's so much shame,
yes.
Right, associated with this.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. When we first had the idea for this project, we put it out. We have a Facebook group for people who listen on the show. And when we were sort of thinking like, is this a thing that we all live with? We just sort of loosely put out the idea of like, do you feel like the economy is not built for you? And we got such a flood of people sort of sighing in relief of like, yes, this is a thing I've thought about but never articulated.
I had to sigh a little bit because basically everything about being a transgender woman is expensive. Doctor shopping, therapist shopping, buying hormones, saving up for surgeries, and all that good stuff.
I'm hoping that I would love to, you know, be married to another woman, and then both of us are going to be affected by the gender pay gap. And honestly, I think that's why I'm grayer than most women my age.
I find, at least in my own experiences, that it's proven to be a lot more difficult to find work than before I was presenting as male. Mm-hmm. And then myself being a trans person of color adds even another layer to that.
So just seeing the flood of people being like, ah, yes, I'm not alone. To me, that was the worth of doing the project and talking about it.
The episode that comes out today is about having kids mm-hmm. while queer. I understand that this was one of the most requested topics. Toby,
yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about that? How did that come together?
Yeah, well, we hear all the time from listeners who are saying, you know, my partner and I are starting to explore the options. And as it turns out, you have to be very aware of the financial burden when you can't go the quote unquote traditional way of having kids, which is not to take away from straight opposite sex couples who also sometimes have to explore IVF or adoption. But I think we were interested in looking at how queer couples, a lot of them by default, have to start from the more expensive options. And how does that affect them?
When I did my research and looked into the different ways that queer couples make families, I landed on a technique called reciprocal IVF. Basically, an egg is taken from one partner, and it's fertilized, and it's then carried by the other partner. But I'm really worried about how expensive it's going to be. Just hope my future wife is rich.
And I think the thing that surprised me most was just couples talking to us about legal expenses that they weren't anticipating afterwards, especially if the child is only biologically one of yours. Mm-hmm. And then the partner has to figure out how do you legally protect your parental rights? Well, then lawyers have to get involved and you have to navigate the specific laws in your state.
When the vital records came down and asked who the father was, she says, there is no father. There are two women, my wife and I. So they refused to put my name on the birth certificate. And I told our family lawyer that, you know, I wanted to have a right and legal protections with my twins. And I was a sole breadwinner and I needed to ensure that my family was protected. So, you know, there was another $2,000-$3,000 that we hadn't accounted for.
So I think those kinds of fees that added up were things I hadn't even considered when queer couples explore having kids.
Then there are surrogacy fees, I'm sure, yeah. and IVF fees. And we should be clear that IVF doesn't always work.
Right.
Right. It's not a one-shot deal and it'll work. Yeah. Adoption often can take multiple tries, right?
Right.
So did you find that the couples that you were talking to were struggling with a lot of these other issues when it comes to having kids, just like the broader financial issues?
Yeah, well, we talked to one couple, Alana and Claire, who they have it in their mind that they want to have children in the future, and they have this sort of like multi-year plan for saving.
I'm the person who's always thinking about finances, and we've both just started out in our careers, and we don't really have the money to have a kid right now or within the next, like, the goal is within the next 3 years, and like, in my mind, I've set aside like a financial plan to like hopefully be there in 3 years.
But to me, what stuck out in talking to them is that their multi-year plan assumes that IVF or some of the routes that they're going to take will work the first time.
Oh, no.
And so the way that they have to sort of accordion in and out what the saving plan looks like, depending on how much they have to try or how much they might have to explore another route, that seems very difficult to me in how you plan for your financial future.
One of the things that I find both terrifying and I guess becoming more and more real as the years go on is retirement.
Yes.
I think a lot of Americans probably are not prepared, should be better prepared.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Kathy, you talked to one of our favorite coworkers, David Gable.
Yes.
He's our fantastic assistant here at WNYC. Tell us a little bit about his situation and retirement.
So David, lovely man, David is in his 60s, and he says this himself, he's not great with money. And when he was younger, he didn't think much about it. He worked in the arts and that sort of thing. And he also, as a gay man, he lived through the AIDS crisis in the 90s. And it's not that he thought that he spent wastefully. It's just that he never thought about what a longer life into retirement would be like. It wasn't a possibility for him.
Well, I remember my dad getting really mad at me and wanting me to, why don't you have more saved for retirement? And my mom gently intervened and went, well, I don't think David's thinking about old age. And it kind of went silent. So that is the moment when I thought, I do have to think about this.
And so now thinking back on all the years where he hadn't been putting away money, what is he supposed to be doing now to make sure that he has some sort of retirement?
I'm nervous that I don't end up in a cot with a bare light bulb swinging above me. But I will have a retirement, and I have a good job right here. And so it's possible, but boy, I'm still nervous.
That is sort of the situation that he is in. I feel like a lot of people are in. And there's like maybe 20 retirement homes in the U.S. that cater to queer seniors. And so what it comes down to is that it's sort of how it's always been. Queer people end up taking care of queer people, we help our own community and help build ourselves as we age.
Tobin and Kathy, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Tobin Lowe and Kathy Tu are the hosts of the podcast Nancy from WNYC Studios. And you can find a link to their Queer Money Matters series on our website, thetakeaway.org. The episode on family planning is out today. Is there an aspect of your identity that makes you feel like the economy is stacked against you?
My name is Mary. I live in suburban Philadelphia. I am disabled for life for 20 years, but I can walk, talk, and think very well. I would dearly love to work in some capacity. Alas, every attempt I have made for employment has been turned down. Experience in running an office is no longer considered an asset.
My name is Will. I'm calling from Philadelphia. I'm ADHD, and I often tell people that I wouldn't be taking my medication if our economy wasn't organized the way it is. To be able to work a traditional job and therefore to make money, I need to be on stimulants for at least a few hours a day. I don't consider myself disabled, but I'm sure a lot of disabled people echo this statement in many, many ways.
Hi, this is Cage, and I'm calling from Portland, Oregon. And I'm a queer transgender man, and I find that part of the reason that I struggle to be a part of this economy in the way that I really want to comes down to the LGBTQ community feeling just undervalued and not seen for so many years. And that in turn becomes something that you internalize as a person. I was socialized as a female and socialized to believe that I won't make as much, that I can't make as much. It's a similar thing for somebody like myself.
Yeah, well, this is Ricky Vassallo. The economy is not built for anyone. Our ability to survive depends on our percentage of positive reactions to our environment. And that's for everybody, regardless of what party we belong to. So let's stick together and let's stop having them divide and conquer us.
Thanks for sharing your stories with us. Tell us what you think on Twitter at The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.